What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Two special guests today, Cam T and Dalton Pence. How are we doing, guys?
Good. Happy to be back.
Doing all right.
Anything is possible.
Good to know, Corey. Good to know.
Corey had a big weekend.
Yeah, coming off the birthday weekend, still feeling it a little bit, I guess.
He is alive. It's good to know. He did have a weird situation, but we'll save that for another day. As always, before we get started, quick reminder, check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But we're going to get right into it, fellas. Thoughts on the Celtics, and are they bouncing back at the right time?
Yeah, I'll take the lead on this. So let's go under the microscope. The defense is looking pretty terrible since All-Star break. So despite, I think they're 6-2 in March, if you just said that, Nick. The defense has not been that good. They're allowing a lot of easy points. And like everything in this weird pendulum season that the Celtics are having, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, and Gordon Hayward seem to be playing great. That's fantastic. That's everything that the Celtics needed. But now Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, and Jason Tatum are all taking a nosedive. So there's just Jason Tatum in particular, actually, if I can put a finer point on it, he's shooting 23.3% from three since the All-Star break, which for someone that everyone has appointed to be like a multi-time MVP and the next son of Boston, that's terrible. The way that I feel about the Celtics, the way I feel about the East, is that it's all really fluid and there's a lot of paper houses or card houses, whatever this saying actually is. And I don't, so this stretch to answer your question, I don't think that the Celtics are hot right now. I think that they're some nice wins, but nothing really spectacular. I think any team that gets hot in the postseason in the East is probably going to go to the finals. I think it's just going to come down to that.
Oh, most definitely. Cam brought up some good points, especially the defensive points and the fact that, you know, the Celtics as the rotation can't really put it all together in terms of, you know, here and there you have some guys playing. I mean, Kyrie Irving's had 3 30-point games in the last 7 contests. You had the 30-point from Gordon Hayward not too long ago. So the 6-2 is definitely something that is putting the Celtics in the right track. But at this point, with all the turmoil that's built up throughout the season, it's hard to say that they're hot just because it's under such a small microscope. And especially with, you know, what's been going on in the month of January leading up to pre and post All-Star break. But I mean, they have Denver tonight. They're traveling to Philly on Wednesday night. They've got a red hot San Antonio team on Sunday that we'll talk about. They still got the Pacers twice. So, I mean, they're definitely in contention. I mean, they're only, I believe it's 2 games out of third and 1 out of fourth. So the top 5 in the East really could see a little bit of a makeover come playoff time. But I think it's really too early to say that they're hot. Now, yeah, if they continue on this trajectory for the next 12 games or so, maybe then we could give a different assessment. But at this point, I think it's a little premature.
Well, I have something to jump in on, and I kind of just want your approval. And sorry in advance, Corey. Are we ready to say that the Pacers have fought valiantly, but it's just not going to last?
I'm on that ship.
Yeah, they have the hardest remaining schedule, I believe. That's correct. I mean, there's a chance they hold on to a top 4 seed, but that feels unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, I've been dreading this stretch of March for the last 2 weeks. Obviously, it's one of the toughest schedules out there. They got the Celtics twice. They got the they've had the Thunder. Yeah, I mean, I think the Pacers probably being the 5 seed is what seems almost like locked in stone at this point in time. So okay. I definitely agree with that. And I mean, the Celtics for this stretch, like, yes, they're winning games. I mean, that loss to the Clippers last week was pretty rough, the 150. And then, of course, you know, a few nights earlier, they beat the Warriors in dramatic, big fashion. So, again, this team continues to have the roller coaster type season. There's moments where they look like they're the best team in the East, and then there's other moments where you're looking for a lot more from them. So, obviously, I think they have the talent, they have the depth, and it kind of just depends on how will this come together in a 7-game series when Brad Stevens has more time to game plan for an opponent. And it's not going all over the place. But I think they're definitely moving in the right direction. I think Tatum struggling is problematic. Hayward looked to be finding his form before he strained his neck. I think Kyrie Irving has been pretty much stellar the entire season. So how does this team kind of round out into form? But I think they've been kind of one step away, it feels like, the entire season. And do they make that last step when it comes playoff time?
Yeah, and it's not even like an obvious step. It's always like the most annoying step. It's like, oh, now we got to mediate Marcus Morris and Jaylen Brown. Oh, Jason Tatum's falling off the earth. Oh, Gordon Hayward's in concussion protocol. Just give me a break. This season is so exhausting.
If you had to pick two players on the Celtics that, you know, if these two guys stepped up, they'd be in a lot better shape and you'd feel more confident about them moving to the playoffs, who would it be?
Well, stepped up from where they are this week or from, like, their season baseline?
In general, in their season or where they're currently at, like, where they're, you know, projected to go.
So I would say if you get the best out of Marcus Smart that we saw this season, I'd lock him in for one of my answers. And I would take peak Jaylen Brown over peak Marcus Morris, so I'll take Jaylen.
Jaylen Brown.
And I'm talking myself into playoff seeding not mattering, and it may or may not be a linchpin in something that I'm writing, but just in terms of intellectual honesty, looking at the away records for the top four teams in the East, and that's basically why I wanted to write off the Pacers, is I didn't write down their away record. Sixers are 25-12 at home, on the road. The Raptors are 21-14 on the road, which are commendable, good records that you'd expect from some of the best teams in the league. The Sixers are just 17-16 on the road, and the Celtics are 17-17 on the road. So despite everything about getting hot and seeding doesn't matter, it would appear that two teams are equipped to go out and win on the road and two teams are not in the top. Yeah,
the Pacers and Celtics both are 17-17 on the road.
Yeah, we already wrote them off, so it's
okay. Yeah, no, I'm just saying. I just want to throw it out there.
You know, if the were to happen and the Celtics and the Pacers were going to match up in the playoffs and they were to upset them, this would be a podcast for Corey to have in his back pocket. Just throwing it out.
I think I'm busy that night. Sorry.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
But Dalton and Corey, what would be two guys in your eyes on Boston that need to step up for them to kind of make that playoff push that we envisioned earlier in the year?
I think one and two, I'm going with Jaylen Brown. 2A, I think you would. I'd probably have to go with Gordon Hayward. I think if Gordon Hayward can return, and obviously it's very easy to dream and say that Gordon Hayward is going to theoretically return to the level that he had been in Utah in his previous season before that gruesome leg injury in game one of his Boston tenure. But I think if you can get some consistency with knocking down the deep ball and to play the little bit of on-ball defense that he's been known to play, along with Jaylen Brown being able to do the same thing, I think that, like Cam said, the defensive woes have added up throughout the season. To get those guys on the same page and to play with a little bit more confidence and consistency would do wonders.
Yeah, for me, it's the Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I mean, Jaylen Brown in some nights looks to be the guy. He looked good against the Hawks the other night off the bench with Hayward not playing. You know, the kid throws down massive dunks. He's a good defender. Tatum, as Cam mentioned earlier, we've kind of already put the label on him that he's going to be the next face of the NBA. He's going to be a future MVP. He's going to probably win titles, is what we've all forced upon this just 20-year-old kid's shoulder, 21 now, I think, actually. So I think for the Celtics to really take that next step, is these two young guys have to produce at the high level that they produced at last year in the playoffs.
Now, taking the next step, you know, before you move on from the Celtics, as of right now, what would be the percentage for you for them winning the East?
Do I have to go first?
Yes.
I'm not ready. Now, I really talked myself into something good, and now I'm talking myself down. So I'll still take the Celtics over the field, but by a slim margin. I'll put it at like a 55 to 60% kind of thing. They just have the depth. They do have the experience. I mean, absent Kawhi, there's no one else in the top of the East that has championship experience quite like Kyrie Irving. Yeah, they've got the pieces, and they have more questions than answers at times, but I'll still take them over the field.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take about a third of that. I'm going to go with about 20% to come out of the East, because, I mean, to say that I think that there is a potential Eastern Conference Finals run in them. I truly do. I believe that whatever seed that they may get, that they might be able to rack up and beat a team potentially like Toronto, maybe even Milwaukee, but to do it again, I'm just not so sure. I'm going to surprisingly take the field over the Celtics in this one, and I hope you don't get offended on that.
That's okay. I don't play for them.
I'm going with this like 50% Celtics at this point in time.
Yeah, let's go.
The Brogdon injury sours me, and the Bucks were my dark horse candidate to win the East before the season started. The Brogdon injury, I don't like any time a team gets hurt. So his health will be a major, asterisk next to this. But I think right now the Celtics, I still like their depth, and I'm believing that the Brad Stevens as the top coach, he was pretty much not forced upon us, but we all kind of labeled him the next best head coach as well after last season, the year before to Isaiah Thomas. I need to see how he does again in the 7-game series. Can he continue to be one of these top guys and actually win like an out of timeout, beat Brett Brown down, guys like that, and help the Celtics team go farther?
Yeah, obviously, the basketball upcoming over the next couple of weeks is going to play a big part in that, especially like you guys talked about the Brogdon injury. Moving over to the Western
Conference. Nick, what do you think about the Celtics?
What do I think about the Celtics? I have pretty good confidence in them. I would probably – see, I'm going to bounce mine out of 100%. I would say I would have Toronto and Milwaukee pretty even before the Brogdon injury, but like you guys mentioned earlier, I would drop that down. I'd probably put Toronto at like 35%. They'd be my favorite right now. Same. I'd probably put Milwaukee – let's see, 25% and then 25% for Boston and Philadelphia as well. I'd probably put, if I was ranking the teams, I'd go Toronto, Milwaukee, Boston, and then Philadelphia. Philadelphia, in my eyes, is last. They just have a lot of issues still, and they turn the ball over in big situations, it seems like, all the time.
Cool.
On to San Antonio, who's been a team that feels like it's getting slept on. 8-game winning streak, I think the longest currently in the NBA, 41-29. Only 1.5 games out of the 4 spot, 3 games out of the 3 spot. Are we sleeping on the Spurs again?
Yeah, I mean, it every year, right? Is this the year where the Spurs take a step back? They started off the year with DeJounte Murray getting hurt, and that kind of felt like a dagger right off the jump. And this team kind of humped, pretty much bounced between the 6th spot all the way to the 12th spot in the West. And now they've gotten hot. They've been led by DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, leaning on the 2-point mid-range game. And a funny stat, the Spurs have the number 1 3-point percentage of any team in the NBA at 39%. They have the second best field goal percentage of any team in the NBA at 47.9%. They are the best at not turning over the basketball, just giving up 12 turnovers a game. And once again, Popovich is showing that it doesn't really matter who he's got on this roster. They're going to play team basketball. They're going to play solid defense. And they're going to be just good enough to at least get into the playoffs and probably give any team they play, a tough 5-6 games.
Oh, Corey, I think you're correct. I think they're at the 6th seed right now. They're 3 games out of 3rd place. I think that they have kind of almost solidified themselves for a playoff spot, barring some drastic debacle at the end of the season. But with the way that they've been playing, doesn't seem too probable. An interesting stat, 5 of their players shoot over 34% from deep, and it is neither DeMar DeRozan nor LaMarcus Aldridge, their 2 arguably best players. DeMar DeRozan shooting a staggering 16.7% off like 1.7, 1.8 attempts a game, which is absolutely atrocious. But he's really been able to rebrand his game and expand his horizons. I mean, he's averaging just over 6 assists per game for a shooting guard. That's not bad, especially with his prototype, LaMarcus Aldridge doing what he does. I really want to shout out to guys like Davis Bertans, who has become one of the top sharpshooters in the league this year, and also Rudy Gay, a guy who a couple of years ago really seemed like he had played himself out of the league, and then 2 years removed from that whole controversy, he's now a 42% three-point shooter this season. So I don't know what they're putting in the water there in Central Texas, but I'm not sure. But you look at this 8-game winning streak. I mean, they beat the Bucks, they beat the Nuggets, they beat the Thunder. So it's really going to be interesting because they have Golden State to go. They have Houston to go. They have the Celtics left on the schedule. So you have definitely some room for where the whole time will tell scenario comes into play. And I think that they could be a tough matchup in the West in the first round, but I really struggle seeing them getting out of the West in the first round because of the fact that who takes the shot in the playoffs? Because you look in the crunch time, DeMar DeRozan has been horrendous in his various stints in the playoffs. And then you have LaMarcus Aldridge, who not necessarily as experienced as one would like for San Antonio to make a run out of the West.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that the way that the stats bear out are almost incredible. And then ultimately we don't really get that confident because, I think, like we said, all the efficiency stats and whatnot, the Rockets take 44.7 threes per game.
Damn right we do.
The Spurs, well, Dalton, the Spurs take 24.8 threes per game. So 45 threes for the Rockets, 25 for the Spurs. How many more points per game do you think the Rockets score a game, per game on average? One.
Wow.
It's one. That's over the course of one season. The whole season, rather. So, first of all, that's embarrassing for the Rockets. Sorry, Dalton. And second of all, the Spurs have just dug in their heels. And, I mean, we've seen some seasons they lean into the three-point thing very hard. And they are like, we're going for it. This is us. We can do it too. This season, they've said to themselves, this is not what our personnel does, and we're not going to do it. And they're really good at doing exactly that. So I'm almost embarrassed that we have slept on the Spurs, and I think it's fair to say we've all slept on the Spurs. But that's a system and a coach that knows how to bring out the best of their players. And I say that as a Patriots fan. Are they going to be the Warriors or the aforementioned Rockets? Almost definitely not. I think there's no chance that that happens. But if they catch the Trailblazers or the Thunder or the Nuggets, sure. And maybe if the seeding bears out or they get a little lucky, a break here or there, they could go to the conference finals, I suppose. You know what I mean? Like, say Chris Paul hurts himself again and they catch the Rockets.
Easy.
Sorry. You know what I'm saying? They're not going the distance, but they won't be an easy out even among the best in the West. So
yeah, it could be an annoying team that you just don't want to face. Now, that kind of led to my next question. What teams would you take the Spurs over in a 7-game series in the West?
Well, I play my cards. I'll take a healthy Rockets and a healthy Dubs, and that's it.
I think if you're looking at, like, Cam, you hit the nail on the head. I think that there's really, with a healthy Golden State, with a healthy Houston, there's almost no chance. I think that if they can hit their shots and do so at the rate that they've been doing in the playoffs and really catch Denver on some off nights, I think that there's a potential there. Assuming that they might be able to get up to a 4 or 5 seed, and with it being OKC or Portland or Utah, I think if they catch Utah, I really think that they have an opportunity because of just how inefficient Utah seems to be. But any team out of Golden State and Houston, I think they can definitely give fits because they're just one of those pesky teams that they do what they do very well. Now, obviously, their weaknesses are exploited in terms of star power, but they do have a solid bunch there in San Antonio.
What about you, Corey? Who would you take over, you know, the Spurs to beat in a 7-game series?
I mean, I think you put the Spurs in a series with anybody aside from the Warriors, I'll give them a chance. You know, I do like Houston in the matchup. I prefer OKC in the matchup as well. But I think anytime you get into a 7-game series with a coach like Popovich, with a collective unit like the Spurs, I think it's going to be an issue. So I would say the Thunder, as they are with Paul George banged up, I give the Spurs a slight edge over them. I think Utah is beatable. I think Portland is easily beatable because of the fact they had to rely so heavily on their two-guard lineup. And now McCollum being hurt, who knows how he looks when he comes back. So, and any other team is going to be too low seeding-wise. So I would give the Spurs a nod over those guys.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. Like we kind of said, they'd give them a tough matchup to most teams. I still don't really think I'd pick the Spurs to necessarily win a series unless it was over maybe Portland and CJ's out. I like Utah. I think Utah's starting to get their ish together at the right time, so I wouldn't pick them. I think they could probably pick Clippers, but that's a highly unlikely matchup. And unless Paul George's shoulders messed up, I see OKC winning it. So I think they could give a team a lot of hard series, but I don't necessarily see them winning a ton of series. But
yeah, like, I think it's worth mentioning, and I probably agree with you more than I just did. They're 13-22 on the road, so if I was holding that against the Celtics, I ought to bring that up for the Spurs.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you know, you talked about the three-point shooting. They shoot a great percentage, but I believe they shoot the least amount of threes in the league. Yep. So it's just like, and two of their best players don't shoot threes, and they're always on the floor together. Spacing issues, and against a team like, let's say, OKC, who plays great defense, and they already do a great job of shrinking the floor, they would just collapse on DeRozan and make his life miserable for a 7-game series. So I think we're kind of sleeping on the Spurs, but in terms of the playoffs, I still think there's not a very high ceiling. Now, Corey, I'm going to pass it to you. What do you got for us?
All right, so we're going to play a little hot take a shot fake. I was on Twitter for 6 hours yesterday, so I had plenty of fine tweets to throw into this. So first hot take a shot fake. LeBron James is a terrible teammate. Hot take a shot fake.
Well, just explain to them what hot take and shot right, yeah. is, because okay. I know what it is, but I'm not sure if they do.
Okay, yeah, hot take. Basically, if it's a hot take, you agree with it. That means you think this is a good take. If it's a shot fake, then you don't think it's a good take.
A shot fake called for a travel. I think to say that this is – I mean, there's people that are swearing up and down that LeBron is washed up, also known as Skip Bayless. But I – you know – to be averaging what he's averaging, I know that they potentially might be empty calories in terms of winning, but I think that LeBron and the rest of the Lakers have accepted the fact that they are a temporary tanking team. So I don't think that there is a need to win games. I think it's more along the lines of sustaining health and trying to rebuild whatever relationship that is left with the younger core and then potentially being able to get a top draft pick. So I don't think necessarily – obviously losing that game yesterday – hurts maybe morale when you see LeBron get blocked by Mario Hezonja. But at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, the loss actually helps Los Angeles. But no, in no way is LeBron falling off planet Earth.
I actually thought that block was good for my morale. So I think that it's a shot fake with a few exceptions. I think like the Mario Chalmers of the world would think that maybe he is a bad teammate, but by and large, I think the history will show that LeBron is a very, very beloved teammate. I think, I think if anything, he is a poor assistant general manager or poor assistant clutch sports manager. And the people that he works closely with botched what was supposed to be a smooth trade season. But I don't think that that changes how LeBron is in the locker room or on the court. So, yeah, that's a shot fake for me.
Yeah, shot fake. I think I just saw an interview today. I'm not sure what TV broadcast was on. I think it was Damon Jones, and he talked about how LeBron is a great teammate, and he had dinner with him in New York later that day, and he brought six of his teammates. So I think the LeBron stuff kind of gets just kind of thrown in the trash. Like, he's done a great job, obviously, the whole thing with him sitting on the bench, and I guess that's like his routine. Literally every time he goes to the bench, he grabs his little seat pad, goes and sits at the end. And even yesterday when they said he was separated from the team, you can clearly see him talking to Tyson Chandler. So complete shot fake in my eyes.
Yeah, that got so much attention, which is why I had to bring it up. Like, Walt Frazier obviously was really
– he went in for, like, literally no reason. Like,
yeah.
Like, dude, the Knicks are the worst-run franchise. So, like, why don't you worry about the Knicks and not about LeBron James?
Well, you see an opportunity to get the attention away from that dumpster fire. Of course, he's going to take the opportunity to try to get some of the scrutiny on another franchise. Come on, Nick.
Yeah, that's deflecting 101.
So, next up. If the Sacramento Kings miss the playoffs, the season becomes a failure. Hot take or shot fake?
Shot fake, easy. I let you guys go.
Shot fake, easy. I mean, there was no expectation. Real. I mean, there was some hope maybe in like late December, early January that maybe alluded to them potentially making a run. But with the strength of the Western Conference, I mean, I never once even thought that Sacramento was – going to make the playoffs, let alone expected to. So I think to consider this a failure would definitely be some. Did you get this tweet from a Sacramento Homer or
just or like Twitter
a front office or something?
Just Twitter. I didn't put much.
It was the front office slip again. They actually sent him a picture. No.
Yeah, that's got to be shut face all around, right? I mean,
yeah.
Sometime I'm sure at the beginning of the season or over the summer, each one of us just like buried the Kings for being lost at sea because this was supposed to be just like the season from hell where they don't have their own pick and what the hell are they fighting for? So, no, great season for the Kings, right? I mean, you got to be looking forward towards next season if you're a Kings fan.
Oh yeah,
and like a ton of player development. Like, a lot of guys got better this year. De'Aaron Fox gives you, like, a guideline for what you're trying to do moving forward. So, in no way do I think it was a failure.
Next up, Giannis Antetokounmpo is already a better, more impactful player than Anthony Davis. Hot take or shot take?
Whoa, cool.
I'm going to go with the hot take. If I had the option to go shot fake into getting a foul and going to the free throw line, I'd probably go with that. But honestly, right now, I mean, you have to think with the way that Giannis plays. I mean, I understand that physically, in terms of, I mean, respective length and height, they may resemble each other in terms of body composition. But the way that Giannis plays with electricity and be able to run the floor better than most guards and to be able to pass, honestly, better than most point guards. I mean, if you look at the statistics, everything backs up to the where that Giannis is a better point guard from a statistical range than a lot of the NBA point guards in the game right now. So I think that it's not necessarily far-fetched, especially when you see the fact that, no, I think Anthony Davis might be a better shooter than Giannis as of right now, but I think that's more of a testament to Giannis's ability to get to the rim almost at will.
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with that take. That's a good hot take. I would like sit and talk about that for an hour because I think there's a lot of merit to that. For everything Dalton just laid down, I don't see why that would be an egregious thing to say. I think I would even pick Giannis over Anthony Davis, if we're being truly honest. I mean, like, certainly if we were starting a team today, I would. You know what? If I had to go out and win a 7-game series, I'd take Giannis then too. So, yeah, I'm into this take. I like this.
Yeah, I think it's a hot take as well. Just the fact is Giannis is clearly having a better season than Anthony Davis, and he's been better this year. If you want to make an argument in the future that Anthony Davis will improve in another situation and maybe they'll flip-flop, that's fine. But as of right now, I think Giannis is better.
Let me ask the question. I mean, in an overall sense, what does Anthony Davis specifically do that is so much better than Giannis, if anything? I mean, we talk about finishing around the rim, and Giannis has almost got that in the bag. I mean, we talk about his ability to set up teammates, to create steals. I would assume maybe post defense and be able to protect the rim and maybe outside shooting. But either then, I mean, Giannis has steadily increased his three-point shooting percentage with each passing month this season. So my question to you guys is, what does Anthony Davis do that's so much better that alludes to that question being a shot fake?
Yeah, the outside shooting, in my mind, it's more reliable than Giannis, although it's not. I'm looking at Davis's stats right now. I mean, it doesn't jump off the page like crazy. The rebounding, but that's just kind of a product of positioning. Davis is better at getting injured.
Low cam.
Better at demanding trades too.
Yeah, he's too.
Both of his knees.
I think Corey. I think he's actually very bad at demanding trades.
You're true. Good point. Good point.
Dalton. I think that just like the common knowledge of the NBA is that Davis is upper echelon and Giannis is still rising stock. But again, I don't really know if that's still consistent or accurate.
Yeah, I would say, you know, obviously AD's a better rim protector as of right now. He's a better post defender. He brings actual shooting to the floor. No offense to Giannis, he can improve in that area. But obviously AD's better in that aspect. And obviously, you know, there's some of the smaller things like setting screens. I don't think Antetokounmpo's asked to set many screens anymore. So I think overall, though, Antetokounmpo's game is better. Like I said, Anthony Davis could improve in another situation. But as of right now, I'm still riding with Giannis.
Yeah, I'm riding with Antetokounmpo too in this. And that's all. You guys covered it really well. Next up, Houston Rocket take. The Houston Rockets are more dangerous to the Golden State Warriors this year than they were last year. I'll take a shot fake.
Right now, I have to go with shot fake. Right now, whether you ask me that, if it's the day before the first round of playoffs, that is yet to be seen. I think that there are still too many unanswered questions right now in terms of the Rockets. Obviously, James Harden is having somehow a better season than he was last year during his MVP campaign. But, I mean, even with Chris Paul's little stint that he's had of excellent play, I mean, he still has to continue his consistency. And I think that there's still some cohesion issues and rotational issues that that wasn't necessarily there last year for Coach D'Antonio, and you still have to incorporate Daniel House and see what role does Iman Shumpert play in terms of his minutes. And I think that last year, I mean, this is a team that was a Chris Paul hamstring injury away from potentially or maybe even probably winning in NBA Finals. So, I mean, to say that this team right now is better than last year's team in regard to taking down the Warriors, I think it's a little premature. I think that using Chris Paul's resurgence and James Harden's historic season as kind of the stability and stable points to hold this argument up, but I think it kind of falters when you realize that the cohesion just isn't there like it was last year.
I am not 100%. I'm going to think out loud here because I could go in both directions, and not necessarily because of anything on the Rocket side of the equation. I think it's odd and nearly disingenuous to question the Thunder. I mean, the Warriors, sorry. But it doesn't pass the smell test in some small way what has happened this season. There just isn't that, like, systemic domination that we're used to. And whether that's Draymond Green isn't showing up the way we thought he would, whether it's that Clay and Steph are mildly more inconsistent, whether it's that their bench is a who's who of old people and people that maybe aren't going to be in the league for much longer. So part of me thinks that the Rockets do have a better chance, but because of what the Warriors are putting down. But then if I think about the Rockets, they're a little bit older, and man, I don't know.
It's almost about the same, to be honest. Because, like, Houston's a little bit less talented, probably a little bit less depth than last year. But Golden State has their issues, and their bench is not great, like you mentioned. And I think there is something to talk about in terms of exposing Cousins in a series against Houston where they isolate the hell out of him.
The other day, he had
27 points against the Rockets in his last. And he was honestly the difference in that game because, I mean, everything else was kind of similar. I mean, Harden and Paul had what they had. Clay and Curry was pretty much similar in regards to stats. You know, I didn't really look at this in a sense of the Warriors. And Cam, you're right. I mean, the Warriors are more vulnerable to get dethroned this year. So I can see how the pendulum can swing back and forth. I think that I could change my take if they incorporate Daniel House into what his role was back in January when they took Golden State down in Oracle without Chris Paul and without the guys that they have now. So I think that if they can get Daniel House back in and really develop a role for Kenneth Reed and Austin Rivers and Iman Shumpert, I think that there's definitely a chance that I can change my opinion on this.
So you're going light shot fake?
Yeah, I'm going something where it kind of looks like a half-hearted shot fake, doesn't really resemble a shot fake, just kind of one of those Russell Westbrook little jab up and down.
You're trying to draw the foul, but you didn't get it.
Right. Nick, where are you going to go with it?
I'm going to go with a light hot take just because I want to be spicy today.
I want to do that. Ever since you brought up Boogie, that's what I was thinking. I'm going to do that with you, but just for Boogie.
What do you got, Corey?
I would probably say a slight hot take. I've also just liked the way the Rockets have looked against the Warriors. They seem to actually raise their game.
They hate them too.
And I think that matters a little bit too. Like when you truly hate a team and you actually have some talent to back it up, I think it does play a little bit in the Rockets' favor. But again, you know, every time I look at the Warriors starting five, I question ever, you know, thinking against that team.
Yeah, if Draymond had like a terrible series, that could really benefit them too. Or like if they were to get, you know, Steph, or maybe if roles reverse this year where Chris Paul doesn't go down, but somebody in Golden State goes down. Obviously, yeah. Iguodala missed time last year.
Better chance of hitting the lottery than that happening. History has shown that that might not be the case. Seems like everybody.
Steph got hurt before. He's been hurt. Steph's been hurt in the playoffs.
True, true. But it seems like over the past couple of years, and from 2017 on, it seems like there's always been a key guy going down for some. I mean, you talk about Kawhi back in 2017, Chris Paul last year, Kyrie Irving in 2015. So, I mean, I definitely wouldn't bet on it, but I'd say it's highly unlikely.
I would say probability's on the opposite end because if all this good luck just happened, they're due for some bad luck.
True.
Unless Steph is just an angel and doesn't get that. That doesn't happen to him. But, Corey, anything else?
I got one more. The MVP race is a three-man race between Antetokounmpo, James Harden, and Joel Embiid. Shot fake.
Call for a travel once again. When you introduced the question before saying the names, I thought you were going to incorporate Paul George. That shows you how much that I'm prepared to give Embiid MVP consideration. I think that he's having a terrific season, and I think that he has really established himself as maybe arguably the best center in the game because of what he can do and the swagger and the finesse that he adds with the offensive prowess that he has and the defensive awareness and post-game and rim protection. But to say that he's on the level of James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo this year would almost be criminal in my mind because of the level. And that's not a detriment to him. I think that's just a testament to how well James Harden and the Greek Freak have played this season.
Yeah, I have a question. Someone posed that on Twitter.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, was I guess
this reference.
Yeah. It was following last night. It was following yesterday's win, and obviously he had 40 points and I think about 16 rebounds or whatever he had.
If the Sixers had won five more games, like if they were at the 50 game mark, or they had ripped off like a 12 game win streak. Or he hadn't been injured for a mysterious amount of time, he could get in the conversation. I think it's fair to say we're probably overlooking about how good of a season he's been. But because it's so narrative and results-driven, no, he's not in my top three. But outstanding season. And JoJo, if you're listening, good job. Really proud of you.
He appreciates that, Cam. He really does. I would put Embiid in the top five, but it's like you miss time, and then the Sixers aren't amazing. And I just think Harden's incredible stretch, and then Giannis just literally dominating. I saw a stat today where it was pretty much a comparison to Shaq's, one of Shaq's big MVP seasons. So that kind of says it all in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it's a shot fake, but I think he's definitely in the top five at least for the conversation.
Yeah,
go ahead, Nick.
I think he's in the top five, but he's not. There's not really any real shot at him winning.
Yeah,
it looked like, and the MVP award a lot of times is awarded. A lot of the weight is really awarded to momentum down the stretch, and it looked like Paul George was going to try to insert his name as kind of a late name on the ballot, and with his performances before the shoulder injury, I think that there was some substance there in terms of traction and ground that he had made up with Harden and Giannis, but with the shoulder injury and his struggles, I think he's kind of made his way out. So I think that that was really the only contender in terms of Giannis and Harden potentially being dethroned. I just think there's so much space in between one and two that unless Embiid averaged about 45 for the rest of the season, I don't even think there's any consideration there.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's it. That's all I got for hot take, shot fake.
All right, that wraps it up for the NBA outlet. Guys, give yourself a quick shout out to everyone they can find you on Twitter.
So, yeah, Depence NBA for all the NBA draft content, some lightweight Houston Rockets takes. So, yeah, the draft content's really going to be spicing up here with the reveal of the top 10 prospects to watch in the upcoming NCAA tournament. So, what do you got, Cam?
You can't spell my last name, so I'm not going to bother. Can I use my time to ask Dalton, in 10 seconds or less, what team would you put John Morant on and why? I'm so fascinated by him.
I got to go with the Suns. I have to go with giving Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and other guys a player that can facilitate the ball in which he can. And I think that really kind of unlocks Devin Booker's potential as an off guard.
Cool. That's better than any Twitter plug I could do. I'm on Twitter. You'll find me. I don't know.
He's on the OTG account sometimes. He's got a crazy last name that I still haven't learned to pronounce, and I've known him for a decent amount of time now. Corey, what do you got?
You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops, and I tweet at OTG Basketball too at times, and yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, any crazy takes you see on the OTG account, 92% chance it was Corey. You can follow OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. And like I said before, follow the show, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTG Basketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.